Thank you, Ramin. Good morning, everyone. I'm Vincent Cambier. I'm the head of the Criminal Record Office in Belgium. Thus, the Academy of European Law invited me to present you the experience of Belgium in connection with ECRIS, more specifically in connection with the standardized way of exchanging the information. I'll also present you later the opinion of Belgium regarding the extension of the current system to the third country nationals, as we talked about before. Well, we'll first see how ECRIS is managed in Belgium by the Central Criminal Record Office in Brussels. We'll see how the convictions are stored in our central criminal record by way of using nomenclatures for the majority of the data, also by the way of a connection with our National Register of Population, which is called the National Register of Natural Persons. Also by way of an automatic export now of the convictions registered in the court registry of the police courts. You must know that the police convictions represent for us more or less 70% of our source. We'll see after the current use of ECRIS in Belgium through the different four processes that it characterizes. First, the notifications of the Belgian convictions we send abroad, the notifications we receive from abroad, the requests we receive from abroad concerning our nationals, and the requests we send abroad concerning this European citizen. After that, we'll see some statistics about how ECRIS is developing in Belgium. I'll also talk to you about some issues we have to face usually. And finally, some prospects for a near future, I hope, near future. So, the central authority in Belgium is this the Criminal Record Office. It's a department of the Public Federal Service in Belgium, the Ministry of Justice, in fact. It's not a department of the police, because in some countries in Europe, the criminal record is one department of the police. Our purposes were originally to inform the judicial authorities, and then we also had to inform the government services and more the citizens today. The content of the criminal record in Belgium is about 2,850,000 files, what we call a file. Every time a person is convicted, he has a file in the criminal record. So we have this amount of files in our criminal record. And we also now register the convictions for the companies, and it's about 20,000 files. For the storage of our convictions, we use several nomenclatures used for the main data, mainly for the offenses, the sanctions, and also the jurisdictions that pronounce the judgment. The connection we have with the National Register of Natural Persons, which is an authentic source, allows us to update automatically the personal data stored in our criminal record. We have that connection since about 10 years, and more than 85% of our files have now the national number of the convicted person. The other 15% concern foreigners who don't have any national number I always take the example of a Frenchman driving through Belgium to go to the Netherlands. He's flashed on the motorway, on the Belgian motorway. He's convicted. He has no national number, and he won't never have such a national number. But it registered in our criminal record on basis on his declared identity. We will see later that the problem of identities is the main problem we have inside our criminal record. As I mentioned, we have also now an automatic input by the courts in our criminal record. It means that when the clerk of the court makes the excerpt of the judgment, he can automatically send it to our database. We don't thus need any new registering of that conviction in our criminal record office. So we will also see later that it's we earn time, for example, to send abroad to another member state when it's a foreigner. Just last figure, we receive more or less 280,000 judgments a year to store in our criminal database. Now, ECRIS in Belgium. We'll see first the history and then the four processes we know and statistic the benefits of the system, because I confirm what Jaime said this morning. ECRIS is really a success story, even if there are some things to improve. But we will do it and we will reach it, I am sure of it. I am very enthusiastic and optimistic about that. The history of ECRIS. I think it's interesting to see where we were. In fact, at the beginning, we had nothing. We received the convictions on paper, usually with a long time. For example, some countries sent only the convictions once a year. So with the network of judicial registers that about what Jaime also spoke about this morning, with the network of judicial registers, it was really a great benefit already in 2003 when France, Germany and Spain created the network. After Belgium took part to that project, seeing the benefits it could bring in terms of security in Europe. The project NGR was based at the beginning on the principles of common nomenclatures already for the understanding of the content of the information transmitted. Because until when we exchanged the information, but we often could not understand the information we received. For example, I remember we received convictions from, for example, Czech Republic or Bulgaria or what I know. We couldn't understand, and we sometimes couldn't register it because of the problem of the understanding. So we developed then first a nomenclature of the offenses, and secondly a nomenclature for the sanctions, which we considered the most important elements of the convictions to be understood. Well, we are concerning the table of offenses. We started from the recent list of the offenses incorporated in the framework decision of the Council of the European Union of 13 June 2002 on the European Arrest Warrant. The European Arrest Warrant list is here. You can see, I hope, the offenses that were incorporated in that list. So it was our start. We started from that list because we had to start from something, in common. And I can assure you that the discussions were difficult. But we also saw that the list of the arrest warrants was not sufficient, because it was only for the main offenses. I mean the highest offenses, the most dangerous offenses. And we realized that it was not enough developed to cover the main offenses we treated every day in a criminal record, of course. That's why we decided to make a list. Each country had to make a list of the 100 most registered offenses in each country. Remember that we were at that moment 4 countries. To try to create a common nomenclature with the offenses often registered in each of our countries. For example, the driving offenses, the most registered in Belgium, as in other countries, I guess, was not included in the, of course, in the arrest warrant list. We decided to translate also our offenses in a common language, understandable between each other. We chose English, and even the choice was already a sensitive political issue at that time. So you have here on the screen on the left the first of the 33 first of the most registered offenses in Belgium, so in 2005, of course, and we had to translate them, to compare them with all the similar list of the other countries. I can show you, for example, here it was the draft we developed. We had to use that document at that time. You see that, for example, it was a bit later because we were more than 4 countries. As Jaime said, the NGR project started with 4 countries, but after it developed until ECRIS. And so we had to make that translation work, to try to not to harmonize, but to try to reach a common nomenclature. And this is the base of the ECRIS offenses codes. Also, another document that I can show you, this is the draft of the sanctions list. So you see that in the first time, every country had to fill in the document with his words, with the words, for example, in his language. So we had a real problem to make a common nomenclature. I come back to my... in fact, in Belgium, it was, I would say, maybe easier, because we had, since 1996, we already used nomenclatures for offenses, sanctions and jurisdiction. And we also used structured data, for example, for the dates of the conviction. We had to develop such a system to be able to produce automatically an extract of criminal record in each of our 3 national languages, because in Belgium we have 3 national languages, French, Dutch and German. And we also had to develop that system on the national level, I mean, to be able to produce an automatic generation of every extract with application of the deletion rules. We talked also about the question and the problem of the deletion rules, but we had that in Belgium since 1996. So we to develop, to reach a definitive ECRIS offense codes list, we developed then the our sworn list to reach this kind of nomenclature. You see, for example, I just took a part of the nomenclature. You see, for example, that for terrorism, I don't remember how many. Yes, you see here, for example, that terrorism, it was only terrorism in the arrest warrant arrest list. But in the ACRIS list, you see now that there is terrorism, that it's an open category. An open category means that the country can choose that category if it doesn't find any subcategory, for example, directing a terrorist group or financing of terrorism and so on. If it can't send one of these five subcategories, it has to choose the open category terrorism. Well, let's see now the four processes we have concerning ACRIS. It's the same, I think, in each country, as Jaime told you. First, the notification out. These are the sendings of a registered conviction regarding a person from another member state. So we send, Belgium sends that notification to the member state. In Belgium, this process is fully automated process. So we have nothing to do. The notification here, that's the reception from another member state of a conviction regarding one of our Belgian nationals. This is partially automatic. Then we have all the requests and the responses, of course. The requests in, these are the requests that we received regarding one of our nationals. And we have then to transmit the response for that request. This is also partially automated, we'll see it. And finally, the requests out. These are the requests that we send regarding a person from another member state. So we send it to one of the member states in the European Union. And we receive the response of that member state. And this is also, in Belgium, partially automated processing. You must know that it's not the same situation for all these four processes. It's not the same situation on the level of automation, it's not the same in each country of the European Union. The first process, so as I said, it's fully automatic. And we have two scenarios. As I told you, we receive now automatically a large part of the convictions in Belgium in our criminal record, the police courts convictions. And if this is the case in scenario one, when the clerk of the jurisdiction makes the registry of the conviction, inside the jurisdiction, it's automatically sent in our database and it's automatically sent abroad to the member state. We'll see after, for example, with what also Jaime spoke about with the conversion of the Belgian codes in the ACRIS code. There is a system of mapping of codes. And if it's not automatic recorded by the court, we have to record it in our office and then transmit it. And it's also automatic to the member state. The second process, notifications here, these are partially automated processings because we receive automatically the notification with the mean of the ACRIS reference implementation. So it's the computer application the Commission developed and proposed for the member states that wanted to use it. And it's really a very interesting tool because you'll see after I'll show you some examples of what is exchanged. So if there is an automatic reception of the notification, we have to record it manually in our criminal record office. But I hope in the future it will be also automatic, as I know it's automatic in some countries. Process 3, requests in. These are the requests that the other member states send to us. Also via the ECRIS reference implementation, we receive automatically. It's like, I would say it's like an email. You receive a request, but it's like it was elaborated like an email box. It's very easy to use. So in Belgium, one of my colleagues analyzes the request and searches for the person in our criminal record. If the person is known in our criminal record, the user can send the criminal record of the person by a copy-paste of request ID reference into our criminal application. So it's nearly automatic also. If the person is unknown in our criminal record, the user, my colleague, checks first in our national register of natural persons to know if the person really is a Belgian national. Because it happens that we receive, for example, in some examples after that, we receive requests that concern not a national. And if the person is really unknown, then we send back to the member state that has sent the request that it's the person does not exist. The last process we know are the requests out. These are the requests we make and that are made by a Belgian authority for an extract of the criminal record of a member state. For example, a magistrate in charge of penal affairs in Belgium asks to our office, please ask to Spain the extract of criminal record for that person that I arrested and who is Spanish. So the user enters a request regarding the person in the reference implementation also and sending automatically, of course, to the relevant member state. And we send and we wait for the response. Sometimes it's in the, I would say, in between, inside 15 minutes. Some countries answer very quickly, some others not so quickly, but in general we don't have any problem with that. Because, as was also said this morning, we have theoretically a time answer of 10 days. Yes, I also mention here that the difficulty regarding these requests out is the different requirements to identify a person by the member state. Because, for example, some countries ask for very precious information and very specific information. For example, the father's name, the province of birth, which is not always known by the criminal record. And even in the judgment, the judge pronounces, it's not mentioned. So we have that kind of problem daily. I mean, these are our very practical problems. Well, some issues now. Don't worry. As I told you, I am sure that ECRIS is an interesting tool and is a success story certainly. But I just wanted to talk to you about the issues we have, because sometimes it also concerns the work that the judge does, for example, concerning the identity of the person. For example, when we respond to an ECRIS request, and that concerns one or several aliases in Belgium, we include in the message that all aliases were checked. We have a remark box available for that. But some member states do not that check. So you see that sometimes there is a difference of treatment between the member states. Yes, also other issues we know, it's that some member states sometimes mix up different data elements. For example, the city of birth and the family name. When it's an obvious mix-up, for example, when you receive a request with the identity Brussels Vincent, born in Cambier, we know what to do, of course. We know that we have to only to change, but all the cases are not so obvious. We'll see later. Other issues we have, yes, it's nearly the same nature of problem, incorrect of incomplete data. For example, only a year of birth or incorrect spelling of the name and other missing data elements, as I mentioned. A specific problem for Belgium, for the criminal record in Belgium, is that we still have some non-computerized records. What does it mean? It concerns the records that still have, for example, some old convictions that were not yet stored in our database. So we have to first to register these old convictions to be able to send a complete extract of criminal record to the member state. Well, it can cause some delay in the answer, but as I told you, we have maximum 10 days, so of course it's possible. Another problem that we sometimes have to face is that some member states use sometimes general codes for example, for the offense. As I showed you, the ECRIS offenses list has one very general code, other offense. And when we get that, we don't know what really is the offense committed. Another issue is concerned the deletion of the convictions. Some member states send, for example, a pardon, but the previous conviction they sent with the info is not transmitted. So we can't make the link between the convictions. For example, we get a conviction at one time, and later we get a conviction with pardon, but we don't know what kind of conviction it concerns. And some member states do the job and they send us clear information. Other issues we know is, for example, the link between the facts and the sanction. It's not always clear. For example, we receive from a member state one fine at the amount and another fine for three different facts, and we can't make the link between the sanctions and the facts. Yes, sometimes also legal terms are not clear for the workers. I mean, for the workers in the criminal record office, maybe it's the same in other countries also. For example, end of penalty. What does it mean? It's one of the sanction included in the ECRIS sanctioned list. For example, we don't know what are the real consequences on the registered conviction. Well, I can show you maybe now some example of the problem, or maybe later. No, I do it later, because if I have time, I come back. Yes, my conclusion is that, of course, we are very much aware of the fact that every member state does everything within its power to ensure the best possible transfer of data. Yes, here, for example, you have here the process of generating a notification out. So we send the conviction, the Belgian conviction, abroad. For example, here, you have what the criminal record receives. That's an example in Dutch. But we see, for example, the elements of the identity there, and the element of the sanction, and the fact that was committed. This is a screen of our computer application, and you see, for example, that for a person, we import automatically, as I told you, the data of our National Register of Population. So it's easy. I want to show you how the conviction is stored and registered in our computer application. So you have the conviction on the left, we received from the court, and on the right of the screen you have our application, and you see, for example, that we use codes for here the jurisdiction, the land of the jurisdiction, and so on. Also, for example, the fact that it was in first instance of in appeal, and so on. For example, you see the mapping, the conversion of what appears on the source on the left. For example, here, the fine of 40 euro, it's here. And what is, I think it's interesting, is that the fact we have on the source, which is rood licht in Dutch, it means red light, red light, traffic, driving offense, red light. We use also codes here in our application to translate that code, and that is that code here, that offense code, that will be mapped into the ECRIS code to be sent abroad. Some statistics now, to illustrate in what measure ECRIS is very interesting. You see that, for example, concerning the notifications Belgium gets from 2012 until 2016, you see that the amount is higher, of course, in the years after the beginning, of course, the implementation of ECRIS in 2012. You also see that we get the most notifications from our border countries, generally, or also for the countries, the nationalities that for what we have a quite important community in Belgium, for example, Spanish people, for example, Italian people, and the others, also the Polish people, PL there. But for the others, these are our borders countries, of course. These are the statistics for the notifications we send. So it concerns also mainly our borders countries. We also have, you see that we have a quite important Romanian community in Belgium. Bulgarian also, that's why maybe there are more convictions that are sent concerning these nationalities. But you see also that the amount is quite important since 2012, of course. The requests we receive, of course, the same model. The requests we send, mainly France, to France and to the Netherlands. I also wanted to show you the statistics about the identity problems that we have. For example, for the requests we send abroad, but that we sent in last year, in 2016, you can see, for example, that for France, we had we sent more than 1,400 requests, and we had 65 problems concerning the identity. So you can see the link between the problems and the amount of the requests we sent. Same thing for the notifications, because I want to tell you that this is, in my opinion, the most important problem we have. I mean, in terms of managing the criminal record, and that concerns the identities. Just some figures concerning terrorism sent by our country in between 2012 and 2016. Also here I wanted to show you how the Belgian nomenclature of offenses is mapped with the ECRIS codes. In fact, you have to know that the ECRIS codes list is a list that each country has to use. I mean, each country has to choose the ECRIS code for its national codes. It's a choice, but it's an important choice, of course. So you can see here how Belgium mapped the national codes to the ECRIS codes. The future. The future, we think and we plead for the extension of ECRIS to the third country nationals. Why? For an equal treatment of the persons first. Because we don't think that it's normal that, for example, there is a very very interesting system developed for some people, and there is no such a good tool for other peoples. We also plead for the extension of ECRIS to the third country nationals. Yes, for an increased efficiency of the system of exchange. And we plead for a central index of the third country nationals. We also plead for the generalization of the use of fingerprints, not only for the TCNs, we talked about it this morning, I won't come back to that, but concerning Belgium, we also plead for the use of fingerprints for the Europeans. Why? Because we, as I tried to show you, we have regularly problems with identities, and also for European nationals. You'll see in some examples after that some countries send us a request, but we don't, concerning that it's a national, but it's not a national. And then, what do we do? Maybe there we have some contacts, some more informal contacts later, after, to try to find who is the, this was a case of James Bond, of course, and it's a case that we have I would say, fortunately, not every day, but we have that kind of problems. So of course the purpose is that to avoid that an arrested person falls through the cracks, of course. Yes, Jaime mentioned, or we mentioned during the discussion this morning, the problem of the person who has two nationalities, one EU and one TCN. So that's why we think that there would ideally be a central index, a centralized index for with the fingerprints for TCNs and for the European. But I don't speak about the centralized system for the convictions, because we talked about the forum this morning during the discussion, and we thought since the beginning in Belgium and also with other member states, we thought that and we think that a very general central database with convictions, I would say, is nearly impossible. Why? I see the reason of the deletion of the rules Jaime talked about also this morning. We have completely different systems of deletion of the rules in each country. And even, for example, the countries don't store the same convictions in each country, in each of our countries. For example, I think that in Germany they don't register the driving offenses in the criminal record, so we don't get that kind of convictions, and we do, for example. So you see that there are so many differences concerning the convictions that I think, yes, of course, there is the solution of harmonization, but we don't. I think it's impossible to realize. I mean, in a next future. So I just want, if I have time again, 3 minutes. Okay, I just want to show you. Yes, for example, here. Wait a minute, because. Yes, for example, here you see that this is an example of notification we get from Cyprus in this case, and you see that of course there are a lot of terms in Cyrillic alphabet, but we don't understand that. With all my respect for my colleagues of Cyprus, we don't understand. So that's the real benefit of ECRIS. We understand each other now. Because before, when my criminal record received that kind of conviction, sorry, but we couldn't do anything with it. And now it's possible. Now it's stored in our criminal register and it's sent abroad. For example, here, yes, sorry, but here, for example, I wanted to choose, for example, the problem we have sometimes, the use of a general code, other offense. So you see that, don't want to criticize, of course, Cyprus, because other member states do it also, but you see that with that kind of notification, it's still a problem for us. Of course, we can see that, for example, there is 6 months of imprisonment, okay, but for what offense, we don't know it. Because the national title here, this is the offense committed and registered by in Cyprus, yes, but we don't understand it, of course. Okay, I'll stop here because I could, of course, show you other examples, but I hope you understood the main issues we have to face. But as I said, these are the minor problems we have. The major problem we have is the problem of the identity, because you must realize that a criminal record, I always say that a criminal record is at the end of the penal chain: police, justice, the judicial authorities, and then jails, prison, for example. And between you have the criminal record. So we receive an information. And we have to transmit it after to the judicial authorities, for example. So it's so important for us to have the identities correct. Thank you for your attention.
Bien, buenos días a todos. Dejaré tiempo por si alguno necesita utilizar traducción.
from time.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay.
One.
Bueno. Buenos días a todos. Gracias otra vez. Gracias a la ERA por la invitación. A Fer, como siempre, gracias a Vincent por su presentación fantástica. Como suele ser habitual, el honor de ser el último ponente lleva unido una restricción del tiempo del que no quiero abusar. Primero, por dejar un mínimo espacio al debate. Y segundo, porque imagino que lo más interesante de la jornada puede que sean los talleres posteriores. Parece que ya... Intentaré no hablar muy rápido, yo dirijo una unidad de interpretación, sé lo complicado que puede ser si me apresuro demasiado. Me llamo Javier Sanfer, soy letrado de la Administración de Justicia, que hablando ayer en la cena con algunos asistentes he comprobado que, como es habitual, es una digamos, profesión jurídica desconocida para muchos de nuestros colegas. Simplemente por apuntarlo, es una figura que interviene en los juzgados y tribunales españoles, tanto en el orden civil como en el penal, con diversas atribuciones, y que tiene una peculiar intervención, porque está en un proceso de reforma, pero que sí tiene una cierta intervención en la introducción y en la obtención de datos de los registros criminales en España. Yo en la actualidad no trabajo en juzgados y tribunales desde hace algo más de un año, y me desempeño en el Ministerio de Justicia en la Dirección General de Cooperación Jurídica Internacional. Por lo que hace a la temática de hoy, y siendo muy rápido para intentar dejar un poco de espacio, el sistema español de registros criminales, desde el punto de vista interno y antes de enlazarlo con el sistema ECRIS, presupone, en primer lugar, una cuestión. Toda la información que introducimos en los registros lo es con independencia absoluta de la nacionalidad, sea nacional, comunitaria o de cualquier otro estado, de la persona condenada. Desde el punto de vista policial, en España me parece que las cifras son similares a las que ha presentado Vincent. Aproximadamente el 25% de las detenciones que lleva a cabo las fuerzas y cuerpos de seguridad del Estado se corresponden con personas de nacionalidad no española. Los fuerzas y cuerpos de seguridad, como decía, introducen y registran algunos datos que luego pueden ser compartidos, aunque no son los que nos interesan, porque no constituyen, digamos, el objeto del sistema de registros criminales que enlaza con ECRIS, que es el registro central de penados. En cualquier caso, como decía, la policía tiene varias posibilidades de intervención. En algunos de esos casos sí que se realiza una grabación y registro de las huellas dactilares de las personas sometidas. Bueno, creo que con eso será suficiente. Y como les decía, la policía sí dispone de un sistema automático de identificación dactilar, puesto que en los sistemas de registros judiciales no se almacenan huellas de detenidos. Simplemente por, dado que luego hablaré de huellas dactilares, en este momento los registros españoles cuentan con unos 4 millones de huellas dactilares almacenadas. Ahí están las estadísticas de los últimos 6 años. Por eso que ese número importante de reseñas identificadas y de autores identificados por huellas es uno de los argumentos que frecuentemente se utilizan, y creo que esto lo comparten todos los Estados miembros, para valorar la conveniencia de entrar en un sistema de compartición de este tipo de información. Lógicamente, las instituciones penitenciarias y el sistema Eurodac, del que, no lo sé, supongo que se habrá hablado a lo largo del seminario, que a fin de cuentas es un sistema de identificación de solicitantes de asilo, también almacenan este tipo de información. En cualquier caso, los registros administrativos que apoyan la actividad judicial, el Registro Central de Penados y Rebeldes, incorpora una serie de información. Se regula un Real Decreto de hace, digamos, de un tiempo bastante prolongado. Y esa información se introduce por los órganos judiciales en el mismo momento en que se dispone de una sentencia firme. Es precisamente el personal de la oficina judicial, bajo las órdenes, por así decirlo, del letrado de la Administración de Justicia, quien introduce esos datos, y las posibilidades de acceso se establecen tanto para todo el personal de los órganos judiciales como para fiscales, incluso para actividades distintas de la búsqueda relacionada con procesos judiciales, para la policía judicial a través de la normativa en vigor y determinados convenios de colaboración de 2013. si no recuerdo mal. La información que se incluye en estos registros es muy similar a la que ha presentado Vincent, tampoco me detendré en eso, tanto en cuanto a los datos identificativos de nacionalidad, incluso también el nombre del padre, la provincia de nacimiento, datos que en determinadas situaciones pueden ser efectivamente muy complicados de localizar. Este es un poco, también por ver la presentación del Registro Central de Penados y la manera de tanto de consultar como de introducir información en el sistema. Cualquier consulta de un nacional de un tercer estado, en caso de que sea la nacionalidad comunitaria, permite a cualquier operador jurídico, puesto que todos los datos están automatizados, a cualquier operador jurídico de cualquier juzgado o tribunal de España, remitir automáticamente una solicitud al Registro Central de Penados para que el mismo dirija a ese tercer estado una request, iba a decir por la terminología inglesa, para obtener todo el listado de antecedentes penales que tenga en su país de origen, de acuerdo con el sistema de información descentralizada que plantea ECLIS. Querría centrarme, eso sí, sobre algunas cuestiones prácticas, un poco más, por así decirlo, operativas. Las estadísticas de ECLIS en España, con ser similares a las que ha planteado Vincent con respecto a Bélgica, demuestran que el sistema funciona, que funciona bien y que además funciona en una base de incremento exponencial desde el año 2012. En el año 2012 se emitieron 25.000 solicitudes, si no recuerdo mal, hemos llegado a 60.000, un número parecido en el último año del que he dispuesto de datos, que es el año 2015. En cualquier caso, desde el punto de vista práctico, la delincuencia lógicamente obedece a patrones no solamente nacionales, sino también geográficos del estado de referencia. En el caso de España, como decía, el 25% de los detenidos y sometidos a enjuiciamiento y posteriormente a condena son extranjeros. De ellos, aproximadamente un 10% son comunitarios y un 15% son ciudadanos extracomunitarios. Si bien se da la peculiaridad de que la delincuencia, las detenciones y las condenas respecto de ciudadanos, tanto comunitarios como extracomunitarios, se localizan geográficamente en una parte muy determinada del territorio nacional, que es el arco mediterráneo. Yo me he dedicado durante 5 años al trabajo en un juzgado de violencia de género, precisamente en esa zona, con una incidencia de delincuencia no transnacional en el sentido de delincuencia organizada, sino de delincuencia con un alto componente de extranjería muy elevado. Es por ello que ECRIS supuso, yo empecé a trabajar en 2009, una importante herramienta de cara al enjuiciamiento correcto y al tratamiento procesal correcto de una serie de figuras como puede ser la reincidencia en este tipo de cuestiones. Pero sin embargo se siguen dando una serie de problemas específicos que son los que sí que quería tratar. En primer lugar, efectivamente, el problema de los juicios rápidos. Es cierto que ECRIS es un sistema parcialmente automatizado, que lógicamente no permite la consulta en tiempo real y que nos presenta en primer lugar el problema de los juicios rápidos. En el sistema español de enjuiciamiento y castigo de los delitos de violencia de género habitualmente obtenemos condenas inmediatas en el mismo día o al día siguiente de comisión de los hechos. Y en cualquier caso en el 90% aproximadamente en un plazo no superior a 15 días. Es extremadamente complicado conseguir un completo listado de antecedentes penales de un ciudadano comunitario en este tipo de supuestos. Es cierto que en la práctica los jueces y tribunales seguían por una regla que no es infalible, pero que sí que tiene una serie de aplicaciones prácticas. Es decir, en el caso concreto de la violencia de género, lógicamente la presencia de la víctima en el procedimiento ayuda a tener información, aunque sea parcial y sesgada, sobre la posible existencia de condenas previas. Pero no es así en otro tipo de procedimientos. Y fundamentalmente el procedimiento en el que sí que se encuentran problemas es al que ha hecho referencia Vincent, el de los delitos de tráfico. Es cierto que resulta muy complejo obtener, y muchas veces dificulta la movilidad de ciudadanos de estados comunitarios el hecho de que los procedimientos no puedan realizarse por la vía más rápida, sino que para una mayor seguridad jurídica sea necesario paralizar el procedimiento y, digamos, alargarlo durante, en algunos casos, años esperando a esa contestación, que presupone el hecho de que el ciudadano comunitario que simplemente se encuentra en tránsito por territorio nacional no puede haber culminado el procedimiento, sino que se ve sometido a un procedimiento transnacional en el caso de que vuelve a su país de origen. En cuanto a la reincidencia y a la existencia de condenas de otros estados, es verdad que ha habido problemas prácticos en cuanto a la interpretación. En el Estado español por lo menos está solucionada desde la Ley Orgánica 7/2014, pero la interpretación de los plazos y los sistemas muy distintos en todos los estados, como comentaba Vincent, de la cancelación de los antecedentes penales, y que en muchos casos lleva a los abogados a plantear determinadas dudas que, hasta donde yo sé, en algunos casos está valorando la posibilidad de motivar algunas consultas al Tribunal Constitucional en España sobre el sistema de valoración o de interpretación de la norma más favorable en lo que hace a la cancelación de antecedentes penales, puesto que la valoración en España se hace conforme a la normativa española. No en cuanto a la cancelación, sino a la toma en consideración de determinados antecedentes penales para el cómputo no de reincidencia, sino de determinadas modalidades específicas, como puede ser la multireincidencia o determinadas cuestiones que en otros estados no se aplican de manera similar. Y como digo, en España al menos se soluciona mediante la aplicación de la normativa española. Las equivalencias jurídicas y esa tabla que nos ha presentado Vincent también plantea una serie de problemas, no solamente en el caso lógico de que el Estado que remite la nota de condena la deje no en blanco, pero sí utilice una figura genérica, como ese código 2700, creo que era de otros delitos. De acuerdo con nuestra legislación, esa calificación no vincula a los jueces y tribunales y les permite, digamos, según el marco, es un instrumento de esa clasificación, no solamente desde el punto de vista técnico para facilitar la interoperabilidad de los sistemas, sino también para ayudar, dice la decisión marco, al destinatario a tener una mejor comprensión de los hechos sin imposibilitar la interpretación de esa información. Es cierto que en algunos casos hemos tenido el hecho de que los ciudadanos hayan recurrido a su letrado en el país de origen para facilitar copia exacta de las sentencias e intentar demostrar que la calificación jurídica, a los efectos de cómputos de multireincidencia, por ejemplo, en tribunales españoles, no se correspondía exactamente con la información. Pero no todos los ciudadanos que se someten a una detención o un proceso judicial en España pueden contar con, digamos, tener ya asignada una asistencia letrada en su país o conseguir esa información en el plazo, específicamente en el plazo de 24 horas, al que yo me refiero, de delitos graves y de enjuiciamiento inmediato en España. La búsqueda y la transliteración son también problemas frecuentes en los juzgados y tribunales. Nos ha enseñado Vincent antes una nota con el alfabeto griego, transmitida desde Chipre. En mi experiencia he encontrado mayores problemas incluso también en los casos en los que los juzgados y tribunales realizan el esfuerzo de convertir sus alfabetos nacionales a alfabetos, por así decirlo, armonizados o de práctica más común en los estados de la Unión Europea. Es cierto que Grecia tiene un alfabeto distinto, pero también lo tiene Bulgaria. Y mayores problemas se dan en los casos en los que determinados nacionales de terceros estados tienen doble nacionalidad de estados limítrofes. Por ejemplo, hemos tenido problemas dos veces, aunque el supuesto parezca un poco excepcional, con ciudadanos macedonios con doble nacionalidad búlgara, son estados vecinos. En ambos casos, ambos países tienen un sistema de escritura cirílica, pero sin embargo no se translitera igual al alfabeto, por así decirlo, occidental o continental. Se transcriben de manera distinta las letras, con lo cual, tanto en las búsquedas como en las remisiones de condenas, lógicamente el operador jurídico, en este caso español, no acude a los certificados de identidad en idioma cirílico, que son los que posiblemente sean más fiables, sino a la traducción y a la transliteración que realizan nuestras propias autoridades nacionales. Es muy frecuente en España, y por eso es un problema menor, pero que en los casos puntuales puede dar lugar a una serie de cuestiones graves, que la transliteración del cirílico macedonio se realice con las reglas búlgaras, que da lugar, por cierto, a confusiones bastante, bastante relevantes. Por ir acabando y dejar un poco de tiempo, porque creo que ya estamos fuera del margen. En cuanto a la posición de España sobre la extensión de X a terceros nacionales, lógicamente la consideración de creo que España y de todos los estados es positiva en cuanto a la creación de este sistema. Como hablaba antes con algunos compañeros, los motivos que siempre suelen considerarse como idóneos o que dan lugar al debate para la extensión de crisis nacionales de terceros estados, aunque Vincent ha citado otros, como es la igualdad de trato a todos los ciudadanos que deambulan por la Unión Europea, son habitualmente motivos de lucha contra el crimen organizado transnacional y contra el terrorismo. Es cierto que, al menos desde mi punto de vista, la extensión de crisis a naciones de terceros estados no tiene una incidencia especial en ningún tipo delictivo, sino que creo que facilita la labor de determinadas zonas que tienen especial incidencia de extranjería. Por hacer una referencia a la zona en la que yo me desenvuelto y por tratar otra vez problemas prácticos, el arco mediterráneo y la zona sur de España es una zona que tiene un enorme tránsito, además estacional en los meses de verano, de ciudadanos de tercero de países del Magreb y del norte de África que se mueven en coche a través de España para cruzar el estrecho de Gibraltar y pasar las vacaciones en sus países de origen. Lógicamente, cualquier tránsito de ciudadanos no produce por sí un incremento de la delincuencia, pero sí modifica la composición nacional de tanto víctimas como posibles sospechosos o autores de delitos. Desde nuestro punto de vista, los que nos hemos dedicado al trabajo en los juzgados y tribunales en zonas que reciben esa avalancha estacional, el facilitar la búsqueda y consulta de antecedentes penales permite resolver en un espacio de tiempo mínimo y mientras disponemos todavía de esos ciudadanos de nacionales de terceros estados a nuestra disposición de una serie de procedimientos delictivos que en el caso de dejar pasar esas fechas estacionales, por así decirlo, hacen que el procedimiento adquiera nuevamente dimensión transnacional y que tengamos víctimas y agresores residiendo en terceros estados, lo cual alarga el procedimiento y además dificulta en cualquier caso la acción de la justicia. Además de esas consideraciones positivas, lógicamente España también se ha posicionado a favor de un índice centralizado por contraposición al sistema descentralizado que en este momento plantea ICRIS. Y sin entrar en mayor precisión, porque creo que al estar fuera de tiempo es más interesante que algún participante de otros estados que pueda tener una posición diversa a la nuestra pueda intervenir, efectivamente también se ha posicionado a favor de la inclusión de huellas dactilares. En este momento solo se comparten huellas dactilares por lo que tenía apuntado y por lo que pude confirmar hace poco determinados supuestos con el Reino Unido, pero es un camino que puede facilitar efectivamente la comprobación de identidad en aquellos casos en los que por existir diferencias alfabéticas o por ser más compleja la identificación correcta de los documentos de identidad de ciudadanos de terceros estados que las fuerzas y cuerpos de seguridad de los estados de la Unión Europea no tienen tanta costumbre a analizar, puede ser muy positiva. Dejándolo aquí, si existiese alguna pregunta, tanto supongo para Vincent como para mí, yo sí tendría un par que hacerle, fundamentalmente por razones prácticas, pero dejo abierto en primer lugar el turno de intervenciones a los participantes. Muchas gracias y creo que más o menos hemos terminado en la hora.